this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. President Donald Trump and his French counterpart Emmanuel Macron said they discussed ways to contain Iranian ambitions while strengthening the 2015 international nuclear deal with Tehran. Speaking through an interpreter at a joint news conference at the White House Tuesday, Mr. Macron spoke of forging a new deal with Iran.
And I believe that the discussions we've had together make it possible to open the way, to pave the way for a new agreement, an agreement on which we will work. And beyond our European partners, we would like to involve the regional powers and, of course, Russia and Turkey.
The French leader hopes to persuade Mr. Trump not to abandon the existing agreement, but strengthen it. The president, who must decide whether to reimpose sanctions on Iran next month, described the accord as bad, decayed at the foundations, and falling down. He said a way must be found to blunt the Iranian threat.
France and the United States also agree that Iran cannot be allowed to develop a nuclear weapon, and that regime must end its support of terrorism. All over, no matter where you go in the Middle East, you see the fingerprints of Iran behind problems.
Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif told the Associated Press Tuesday if the U.S. withdraws from the agreement, his government would no longer be bound by its obligations. In Nigeria, Muslim semi-nomadic herdsmen armed with guns killed at least 16 people Tuesday in an attack on a Christian church in central Benue State, part of the so-called Middle Belt, plagued by communal violence. The recurring clashes are linked to grazing rights and dwindling fertile land. Dozens have been killed since the new year. This is VOA News. President Trump Tuesday suggested a proposed U.S. North Korean meeting with leader Kim Jong-un may take place sooner rather than later.
We have been told directly that they would like to have the meeting as soon as possible, and we think that's a great thing for the world. That's a great thing for North Korea and South Korea and Japan and France and everybody. So we're having very good discussions.
Mr. Trump described the North Korean leader's behavior in the process as open and honorable. Asked what he meant by seeking complete denuclearization, the president said it means getting rid of North Korea's nukes and vowing not to repeat the past mistakes of easing sanctions prematurely. Mr. Trump also said he prefers to get out of Syria, but not before the mission to defeat Islamic State is complete. He was urged by his French counterpart Tuesday to avoid a precipitous withdrawal and allow diplomacy to create a better Syria.
Tomorrow we will have to find a way to fix the situation from a political point of view, not automatically from a military point of view, which means to set up a series of agreements, part of this big deal, in order to be sure that Syria tomorrow will be a sovereign country with inclusiveness and free people in a situation to decide for the future. This is very important, and that's our duty.
Mr. Trump said the U.S. wants to leave a strong and lasting footprint and avoid, in his words, giving Iran open season to the Mediterranean. In New York, Wall Street dropped sharply in Tuesday trading amid warnings from key companies about the cost of doing business. The benchmark Dow Jones shedding more than 400 points, nearly 1.8%. Jonathan Corpina is with Meridian Equity Partners.
As we get into earnings season, there are some real bellwether companies that are out there that investors do use as gauges as to what's happening in our economy, what's happening in the earnings season. Clearly, Caterpillar report that came out today is one that investors are definitely going to look at and definitely going to use as an indication as to what might possibly be coming down the road.
Caterpillar tumbled over 6% after warning that first quarter earnings would be its high mark for the year. In Toronto, 25-year-old suspect Alec Minissian was charged Tuesday with 10 counts of murder, 13 counts of attempted murder, after plowing a rental van into pedestrians on a crowded street. Graham Gibson is a detective sergeant with the Toronto Police Service.
The accused is alleged to have posted a cryptic message on Facebook minutes before he began driving the rented van, and he drove it southbound on Yonge Street and onto the crowded sidewalks.
The social media posting referenced incel rebellion, a term used to describe involuntary celibacy. It's unclear whether anger toward women motivated the attack. Former U.S. President George H.W. Bush is responding and recovering after recently suffering potentially life-threatening blood infection. The 95-year-old former president remains in intensive care. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, April 25th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The DRC government says it is pleased with the outcome of yesterday's SADC summit.
The president was there, invited by his colleagues, and they acknowledged that the situation was moving in a very good way, and paid tribute to President Kabila for facilitating the electoral process.
Lamba Mende is Information Minister of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Meanwhile, the SADC leaders have called for dialogue in Madagascar. The Commission on Fragile States says a paradigm shift is needed to stabilize poor countries. We look at the role of young people in peace building in fragile states. And Malawi's opposition prepares for Saturday's return home of former President Joyce Banda.
Once she comes home on Saturday, the party will have a convention where we wish that she can take part, contest at the convention. God willing, if she wins, then she will start in the generation next year because we feel that she's our best bet.
Noah Chimpene is spokesperson for the Opposition People's Party of Malawi, and the Kenyan High Court will announce tomorrow the date that it will issue its verdict on homosexuality. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Democratic Republic of Congo's government says it is pleased with the outcome of yesterday's summit of Southern African Development Community leaders in Angola's capital, Luanda. Information Minister Lamba Mende says President Joseph Kabila attended the meeting and the leaders paid tribute to him for facilitating a smooth process in preparation for the December 23rd election this year. Mende said the regional leaders were so pleased that they decided not to appoint a special envoy for the DRC. The opposition in the DRC had urged SADC leaders to demand that President Kabila step down. Even the president of Botswana last week urged Mr. Kabila not to seek another term. Mende says Mr. Kabila will respect the constitutional provision that says no one can run for office three consecutive times.
The president was there, invited by his colleagues, and they made the assessment of the situation in Madagascar as well as the DRC, and about the DRC, they acknowledged that the situation was moving in a very good way since the timetable accepted by all the parties is being strictly respected, and paid tribute to President Kabila for facilitating the electoral process being respected. It was scheduled by Electoral Commission and even decided to not appoint a special envoy of SADC, that was the former president of Namibia, in the DRC, since DRC has cooled its situation down by itself.
So you said they congratulated President Kabila. At the same time, I think they said that your government should adhere, respect the electoral calendar. That means there's some suspicion that maybe something is not right.
No. You have not the good information. The calendar is going on. And till now, all the exercises that are part of that calendar have been respected. That is why our president and our government were congratulated. The calendar is not just the elections on 23rd of December. There is a lot of other things to be done that are being done. And they did acknowledge that everything is being done accordingly to the calendar. That is why they congratulated the government as well as the president.
The reason I say that, because some people, including even the opposition in your country, and most recently the president of Botswana, calling on your president not to seek another term, to just step down.
You know, the role of the opposition is to spread a bad image of the president in charge. And about Botswana, I don't know what is happening with this small country. Maybe they are working with some former colonial power. I don't want to make a lot of comments about it.
I mentioned the opposition because a few days ago I spoke to the opposition person, Mr. Fayulu. He criticized the voter register that has been released, saying in some areas it did not represent the people living in those areas. For example, Kinshasa, in some areas.
What are you telling me? You are not telling your listener anything. it is the role of the opposition to criticize the government. Even if the government is working well, the opposition should criticize it. Because if it doesn't criticize the government, what is the role of opposition? So this is not a matter of discussion. It is a non-issue. Please.
At the same time, they criticize the voter register if it's not representative of what it says. That's a legitimate criticism.
No. Of course, we had a correction of this vote register, and the Electoral Commission is to be congratulated because they discovered more than 6 million people who tried to defraud this electoral register by registering themselves twice or three times or four times, and they eliminated those people. And they first had 46 million voters, and after having revisited that electoral voter register, they brought the list to 40 million. That means that they discovered 6 million people who tried to make their registration fraudulently. So they did a good job. So Fayulu should really pay respect to those people, congratulate them instead of criticizing them.
Before I let you go, Mr. Minister, you know, I always ask this question. Is President Kabila going to run again for president?
I have told you many times that the Constitution will be respected. There is a provision in the Constitution that nobody should run for three times successively. So I don't see the sense for your question.
Mr. Minister, thank you. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
You're welcome.
Lambert is Information Minister of the Democratic Republic of Congo. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. The leaders of the Southern African Development Community, who met yesterday in Angola's capital, have called for more dialogue in resolving the political crises in the Democratic Republic of Congo, Madagascar, and Lesotho. Veteran Angolan journalist Mario Alpavai says the leaders were appointed former Mozambican President Joaquim Chissano as special envoy to Madagascar, where there have been protests over the new electoral reforms.
The SADC double torture summit ends in Luanda with a couple of announcements. First and foremost, the crisis on DRC. As is public, President Kabila was here in Luanda, and the summit calls for real engagement from the DRC government, and President Kabila will the electoral calendar, as is public also. There is an announcement for elections in the next 23 of December, despite some criticism from opposition parties and civil society. The summit supports the engagement of the Congolese government in fulfill all commitments and agreements in a way to fulfill the electoral calendar.
Mario, let me ask you, there were other issues that the summit was supposed to consider. We talked the other day about Lesotho. We talked about the situation in Madagascar. So what did they say about some of those issues?
Yes. First, James, let me add that the summit appointed the former Namibian president, Lucas Mwamba, as a special envoy to DRC to mediate the dialogue between the government, opposition parties, and the civil society and the sort out of the crisis. There is also another envoy. Former Mozambican President Joaquim Chissano will be an envoy to Madagascar. And on Madagascar, the summit also calls for peace and dialogue between governments and opposition parties and the civil society. On Lesotho, the most important announcement is that the summit agreed to postpone for 6 months the presence of the regional peacekeeping forces with more than 200 military, most of them from Angola. The summit calls the Lesotho government to fulfill the SADC roadmap to stabilize peace and abide for the constitutions and the law in order to stabilize the country.
Did you say that the summit appointed a special envoy for the Democratic Republic of Congo? Because I was just speaking to the information minister of the DRC, who said that the summit praised President Kabila about the good job he's doing about the election. So the summit decided not to appoint a special envoy. And you are saying that a special envoy has been appointed.
in these diplomatic and political camps, there are some troubles on words. They didn't say special envoy, but in fact, Lucas Mwamba was appointed to talk with the all parties to do some kind of mediations. It's the same work, more or less, that former Mozambican President Joaquim Chissano will do in Madagascar.
Mario, thank you.
Thank you, James.
That's Mario. Veteran Angolan journalist Mario Alpavaya speaking with me from the capital, Luanda. Today is Wednesday, April 25th. And you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti, Washington. Daybreak Africa time is now 15 minutes past the hour. Supporters of the opposition People's Party of Malawi say former President Joyce Banda is the best candidate to defeat incumbent President Arthur Peter Mutharika in next year's general election. But the party has yet to establish a date for a convention to choose its presidential candidate. Noah Chimpeni, spokesman for the party, says it is clear that the people of Malawi are displeased with the direction of the country and want the former president to return to power to help resolve the country's economic challenges. Chimpeni's remarks came after People's Party officials announced that former President Banda will return to Malawi this Saturday. Chimpeni tells VOA's Peter Clotty that other opposition party officials have confirmed that they will be at the airport to welcome former President Joyce Banda home.
What we're doing so far is just to mobilize our people countrywide, but of course those of course with limited resources, so that at least they are on Saturday they are there at the airport. But also other opposition parties have pledged to send their representatives to be at the airport to welcome our president.
What are the plans that your party has for the former president who led your party in the election that she lost?
So we cannot make plans for her as a person, but what the general feeling or the wish of the supporters is that once she comes home on Saturday, the party will have a convention where we wish that she should take part, contest at the convention. God willing, if she wins, then she should be she'll stand in the generation next year, because we feel that she's our best bet as People's Party, because there's a lot of goodwill towards the Joyce Banda. When people start comparing what she did in 2 years and what is happening now, they feel that she did a better job than what we have at present.
But some people are suggesting that she's been out of the country for too long and she might have lost touch with the people, might not necessarily know what the people want. So making her the flag bearer or winning the presidential candidate to lead your party could pose a significant challenge, since incumbent President Peter Arthur Mutharika, who has the power of the incumbency, could override her seeming of popularity because of the fact that she's been out of the country for a long time. What do you say to that?
You know, Joyce Banda is a very astute and hardworking politician. At least 12 months is enough time for her to crisscross the country, at least to convince people again. Look, she will not be starting for... she won't be breaking new ground. People already know her. They know her work. So therefore, can't say that she's been there. Yes, she's been out of the country for too long. But the good thing is that the current government hasn't done anything much to impress the people. So therefore, she still has a chance if she can work hard when she comes, move around the country. Because the supporters are there already. We'll just be adding up one year from where she left.
In July last year, the police issued an arrest warrant against Banda, although the Anti-Corruption Bureau said it did not have evidence implicating the former president about the infamous Cashgate scandal. What is your party going to do? Do you expect any possible arrest by the police since the warrant still holds?
Obviously, we don't, because as you're saying, that Corruption Bureau says there's nothing to link her to Cashgate. And also, if government had anything against her, they would have already made their moves by now. If they do anything funny when she comes, we know that they're just playing African politics.
Her critics are saying that since she has not been officially cleared by the police, there's case for her to answer about what she knew when she was president, because the buck should have stopped with her, because it was under her tenure that this alleged scandal happened.
It's not that it happened under our watch. It was just an S under our watch. But these things happened from way back and they're continuing right now. So as long as they don't charge her officially, there's nothing for her to fear and there's nothing to answer.
Noah Chimpeni, a spokesman for the Opposition People's Party of Malawi, he spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty from the capital, Lilongwe. A new report by Britain's Growth and Development Commission offers a mix of both good and bad news for poor countries. Some of the countries in the report have achieved middle-income status, and places once plagued by conflict and instability have shown signs of improvement. But the report also notes that the number of people living in what it calls fragile states is growing and may be responsible for mass migration, terrorism, trafficking, and extreme poverty. VOA correspondent Maria Mandialo takes a look at the Commission's findings.
In presenting the report, the chair and co-chair of the Commission on State Fragility, Growth and Development say money that has been poured into the developing world has been helpful, but has not always solved the problems facing some countries.
The assumption that because there is money, there will be solutions is one of the things we have to revisit. Money is needed, but in places like South Sudan, actually money could be a problem.
As nations emerge from conflict and instability, moving swiftly to elections may not always be the best solution, says Commission Chair, former British Prime Minister.
South Sudan being perhaps quite a good example. I think part of the international community thought, right, OK, we've solved the problem. There's going to be Sudan, a predominantly Muslim country. There's going to be South Sudan, a predominantly Christian country. It's going to have money from aid and oil, and let's get on with elections, and it'll all be fine. And, of course, the fundamental settlement between the tribal cleavages in South Sudan wasn't thought through properly.
Tens of thousands of people have been killed in the South Sudan conflict and more displaced in a war that has often been fought along ethnic lines. But fragility is not always related to conflict, says Donald Kaburuka, former head of the African Development Bank.
So fragility is the inability of the state to perform its core functions, from security, delivering services, from education to health. Any state unable to perform its core functions is, by definition, fragile. It could be because of conflicts, it could be the environment, it could be simply dysfunctionality like in Haiti.
Kaburuka notes the number of people living in fragile states is increasing and says different approaches may be necessary.
From Syria, Yemen, Libya, the Sahel, Somalia, and the current solutions are not working. Billions of men have been poured into these countries. A lot of attempts have been made, but none of them seems to be working. There are only a few countries which have been able to escape fragility. And therefore, what we're saying here is we need a paradigm shift. We need a step change. It's not always about money. It's not always about conflict. It's multidimensional. And the recommendations we make fundamentally to put the people of the country in the driver's seat and not have prescriptive approaches to fragility.
Some recommendations focus on local, not international priorities, and reconciliation first before elections. Despite huge successes for international development assistance, the Commission says progress remains slow in the most fragile states, where by 2030, half of the world's poor will be living. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
A South Sudanese civil society activist is in New York to attend a discussion on how young people can contribute to peace building in fragile states like South Sudan. Malua Bolkir is the co-founder of the Africa Youth Network, a local civil society group operating in South Sudan. He says the meeting has given him the courage to mobilize young people for change in South Sudan.
I'm in New York to attend the opening debate for the UN Security Council on progress study on youth peace and security. The progress study was mandated by the UN Security Council in 2015 after they adopting the first ever resolution which recognizes the significant role of young people in the promotion and maintenance of international peace and security. And in 2015, the UN Security Council mandated the UN Secretary General to carry out a progress study to bring out the positive contributions of young people in the promotions of peace and in conflict resolutions. And that report was finalized in February, and it was presented to the Security Council yesterday. So they had a debate on it, and it was really very impressive that the Security Council members were having a positive shift toward the perception of young people.
What is that positive shift?
The positive shift is that yesterday there were over 70 member states of the UN who signed up for the opening debate. And they were really appreciating the role of young people in promotion of peace globally. And they also understand the fact that the young people have always been frustrated by the fact that they are most often viewed as a problem to be solved rather than a partners for peace.
What is your takeaway from this meeting when you go back to South Sudan? What are you taking away?
The takeaway from this meeting is that the young South Sudanese will be able to realize that finally they have been recognized, that they are not only a problem to be solved, but they are agents of peace and conflict resolution within South Sudan. I think as a young South Sudanese, I will be able to use this resolution as a tool to lobby for inclusion of more young people in the grassroots level and in the ongoing peace process as well.
But the last time I checked on you, it appears like you fled South Sudan because your life was in danger. How are you going to implement this beautiful idea when you're not able to go home?
I think the way that I am able to implement this beautiful idea is that the South Sudanese are not only in the country. For example, now I'm in a neighboring country and I'm working with interesting South Sudanese young peace builders who are really advocating for peaceful coexistence of all South Sudanese. So we will be able to use it. And we have youth strategy meetings, not only in South Sudan, because even the youth who are in South Sudan, I understand that their life is most often in danger. There are a lot of, you know, issues. Sometimes the meetings are stormed down by the security.
That's Malu Abol-Kir, co-founder of Africa Youth Network. He was speaking with reporter John Tanza of VOA South Sudan In Focus program. Kenya's High Court is considering whether or not to repeal parts of a colonial era law banning sex between people of the same gender, a crime punishable by up to 14 years in prison. Human rights groups say the law violates the Constitution and opens the way to discrimination and abuse of sexual minorities. However, homosexuality remains far from acceptance in Kenya, and religious groups have urged the court to uphold the existing law. VOA's Daniel Shaw reports from Nairobi.
Religious groups in Kenya have led the charge against homosexuality, but not this congregation.
Come on, just dance.
Nairobi's Cosmopolitan Church welcomes members of all sexual orientations. They pray that the High Court will repeal the colonial-era ban on gay sex.
There's a lot of police harassment, blackmail cases. So some people are afraid of coming here because they don't know what might happen. Then the police can storm in here and wrap people up and go. So removing those laws would give people more confidence to know that they're not criminals and they can be able to associate and mingle and conduct their activities and services without any fear.
The church meets behind closed doors and is rejected by Kenya's Christian establishment, which maintains that legalizing gay sex would be a step toward same-sex marriage.
Kenya, we don't believe in that. Kenya, we are Christians and we confess our family that we support a man to marry a woman, not a man to marry another a fellow man.
Christian groups argued against the repeal before the High Court.
And the reason we are against this gay sex business is because it poses a direct and immediate danger to the family, to the moral values of the community, to the society.
Gay Kenyans are rarely jailed under the law, but say the fear of prosecution and being outed as gay is often used for extortion. Sex workers are among the most vulnerable.
If somebody is raped, when you take them even to the police station to report, when they're told to go to court, they don't show up because they're afraid, because rape cases, they usually have mediators in the court, and then they start asking you questions.
Local rights groups filed the case before the High Court.
The Constitution of Kenya speaks about, its values, and part of its values are social justice, inclusivity. And so at some point then we need to question ourselves whether the laws that we have codified on paper are truly inclusive.
It's a landmark case that could allow gay Kenyans to emerge from the shadows or affirm traditional values that most Kenyans see as the norm. Daniel Sheriff, VOA News, Nairobi.
And that's it for this Wednesday, April 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. We invite you to join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, and sports editor Samson Omali, I'm James Botte wishing you a good day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, join us for a special broadcast on autism, hosted by VOA health correspondent Lenore Madu. She will host a panel of experts to demystify the developmental disorder.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.